This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Well, I didn't say anything bad. I mean, really, maybe just that one. No, I never said anything bad. Hello, everybody. This is Kevin Kelly in the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. Man, just when you think you know somebody, then they turn out to not be the person that you thought you knew, right? Certainly the wrestling world, the sports world, pop culture world is talking about Hulk Hogan and his use repeatedly, apparently, of the N-word and a lot of offensive slurs and just general displays of ignorance. So it's cost him his entire career. And I don't know what to say, but I'm sure we'll talk about it throughout the course of the show. And we're going to have a conversation with one of the most amazing athletes I've ever seen in my whole life. Now, I knew that going in. I knew that Jay Lethal, our guest this week, was an amazing athlete. I mean, after all, he's a top flight professional wrestler. Hell, he's the Ring of Honor World Champion. He's the Ring of Honor World Television Champion. But this past Friday in Baltimore, he and Roderick Strong went to a 60-minute draw for the world title. And it was one of the most remarkable athletic contests I have ever seen. And that's no BS. I was blown away at how much these guys moved over 60 minutes. I barely can sit in a chair for 60 minutes, and these guys wrestled for an hour. We'll talk about Lethal. We'll talk to Lethal about his career. We'll find out what makes him tick, who he is, how his parents shaped his lives, what his plans are for the future, and if he's got any recipes. We'll do all that and a whole lot more here on the show. Our pal and producer is Justin Rosero, and he's here with us now. Hello, Justin. How are you?
I cannot believe they have a video of Hulk Hogan saying "noggin knocker," like Vince McMahon used to say.
If only.
Yeah. The world would be a different place.
My first gut reaction was, well, he's a 61-year-old man who was born and raised in Florida. Chances are he's a racist.
Right.
So maybe just because he's traveled the world and because he's Hulk Hogan, people don't think that he's a racist?
Right. And, you know, whatever. You can't get caught on tape saying it. It's a tough situation. I understand everything about it. I know didn't know he was being filmed. But you know what? Don't bang your friend's wife in his house. And something's probably up. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And I don't care if he was pilled up or drunk or whatever it is. Just don't get yourself in that situation.
When you put yourself in that kind of situation, this type of thing is coming out. You know, should we expect a good cultured person, somebody who's banging his friend's wife?
Right.
I mean, what a pig.
And he's been exposed as that anyway. I mean, we love him because he's Hulk Hogan and, you know, our memories are beloved of him and all the moments he's given us.
Sure.
Our wrestling history. It's cool seeing him back over the last couple of years as a Goodwill ambassador, showing up at Mandy, all this stuff. But ever since really the reality show and Brooke's career and all this other stuff, the, you know, Nick's lawsuit, the divorce, he's become somewhat of a joke. I mean, he used to be someone you looked at and admired, but ever since the reality TV era for him, he's become kind of a punchline to a lot of things. So to me, this is just like the next step in the evolution of that. He's being exposed this way. And, you know, I want to get your thoughts, Kev. Do you think Gawker leaked this as kind of revenge for the lawsuit?
Hell yes.
Yeah.
That was my second thought. It's like, you're trying to destroy Gawker? Guess what? Guess what? When you lay down with dogs, you wake up with fleas. So it's to the people who didn't like Hulk Hogan, a lot of them are saying, ha ha, good. To a lot of people that thought they knew him, a lot of people are saying, aw, that's sad. And the fans are saying, really? another hero, another icon, another person that we looked up to has been torn down from the pedestal. That, to me, is one of the saddest parts of all of this.
Right.
Not that Hulk Hogan is a racist. Not that, you know, his career has been destroyed. But there were people, and JR, I'll put you in that, and hello to Dan McGinn, I'll throw you in this mix as well. There are a lot of people in your age groups and slightly younger and slightly older that were hugely influenced as kids by Hulk Hogan. And a lot of people who aspired to be a part of the industry that I've worked in for 24 years have said that Hulk Hogan was a huge part of their lives. So from that standpoint, yeah, it sucks. But it's, you know, it kind of all goes back to, especially in this reality TV, social media driven era in which we live, the immediacy and the reaction to bad news, controversial things is swift and severe, and there's no comeback from it. The news cycle never ends, and it's instantaneous.
And they had to do what they did. And that was the biggest bone of contention in our little group here that lit up on Friday when it happened. A lot of arguing around whether or not they should have fired him or did what they did, pulled him off the network. And I mean, they had to. They had no other choice, I don't think, but to do it. And you can say, well, maybe they overreacted. Maybe they could have just, you know, whatever, put him on probation. Do they need to scrub some of the stuff from the network? Yeah, I think you do. And I think they've been burnt before. And you even think back, and I am not in any way comparing this to what Chris Benoit did, but you look back to that situation and remember they went on with that show and kept going with it, even though many believe they knew what happened. And they caught a lot of crap for that. And they caught crap when, you know, going way back as far as Owen Hart.
So right.
They were in a tough spot, right? If they keep going with it, they get burnt. And if they pull the trigger too fast, they get burnt. Now, can you say this isn't obviously nearly as bad as those situations? Yes, obviously. But it's still a pretty big deal. And it's an epidemic these days. I mean, even Colin Cowherd last week, you know, they pulled him off ESPN now, too, because of what he said. Granted, he's leaving anyway. I don't know if he would have been pulled off if his contract wasn't up. But, you know, he was saying racial things as well about Dominican players and whatnot in baseball.
He basically said people from the Dominican Republic are not smart.
Right. He said they're stupid, and that's why they play baseball, because baseball is a stupid man's game. That's basically what he said. You don't need to be smart to play baseball.
Completely ignorant.
Right.
Trying to be funny, shocky, whatever.
And the Hogan thing, and I saw this was a post on our buddy Scott Keats blog. Someone mentioned that, you know, Hogan almost seemed like he was venting, right? Because I'm sure it's just piling on to him that Brooke's career has been one of the drains on him financially, and her kind of being a bomb and everything he put into it. And, you know, the things he said almost just seemed like he was just frustrated with the situation he was in. But then it's like he felt he had to be cool and go in further and be like, yeah, I'm a racist. I hate that. You know, it's like I feel like if he just kind of said what he said initially, maybe would have blown over a bit, and I'm not condoning it. It was still stupid and wrong for him to ever say it. But you can kind of say, oh, he's just frustrated with Brooke's career. He's pilled up, all right? But it's almost like he had to keep drilling it home, and that's what ended up burning him in the end.
Yeah, and it's what lives in his heart.
Oh, obviously, yes.
That's the worst part of all of this. But again, a 61-year-old man who was born and raised in Florida. And now I know a lot of people listening are like, oh, I'm from Florida. I'm not a racist. I'm not saying that you are. But what I am saying is that culturally, there were many, many more people who were and are racists who were born and raised in the 50s, 60s that grew up in the South. Mm-hmm. Because that was the way they were conditioned because of segregation.
And
because
the North.
Of their parents.
And the North. I mean, I think it goes by ethnicity. I'm fully Italian, you know, like Nunzio, full-blooded Italian, and Tommy Rich. But the, you know, and it was rampant in my family, my grandfather's, and you know, my dad at times, and he's had to learn. But you know, it was prevalent then when I was growing up. There was nothing to hear, you know, racial slurs and all that
sure.
stuff. I mean, that's just the era they grew up in. And sure, but as a guy of his magnitude, you have to be aware of your situation. So while we can sit here and say we can rationalize why he said what he said, and I think we're okay to do so. You have to also be aware that this stuff can happen to you now. And I know that was 5 years ago. He's pilled up. Whatever he's doing, you have to be aware. You're putting yourself in that situation, right, that you know you're a superstar. This stuff can come out in the tabloid and the news cycle that looks for this kind of stuff now for celebrities looking for anything. You have to be on your best behavior. And he just got burnt bad, and it cost him quite a bit.
He sure did. And, you know, my grandfather, who died in 1976 when I was 9 years old, he had taught, and he was, you know, in his 70s, he had taught his dog to go after, this is horrible, taught his dog to go after, chase and bite the black mailman who delivered mail to his house. Isn't that awful?
Very awful.
Now, luckily, was my father a racist? I know my grandfather was. My father was many times an ignorant person, but he was kind of a smart person too. So I think he started to break the cycle of it. And I know by the time that I was born, like I grew up and I lived in a mixed race neighborhood, and two of my best friends that lived in my building when I grew up in New York were black, Junior Jackson and Walter Williams. I think it was a little weird for my dad when I brought them home as friends, but it was not weird
there.
Yeah, well, I know it was easy names to remember all these years later, and but like Junior's mom, I think was of Asian descent, and dad was super cool, and I don't remember Walter's father; only remember his mother, and that makes me think, you know, because this is now going back 40 years, maybe his mom was a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, man, just super cool buddies. And we hung out and we did everything together. And I had friends because they went to a different school than me, because I went to Catholic school. So I had friends that I hung out with at school. And then I had those guys that I hung out with at home. And a, you know, Puerto Rican guy, Tony Martinez. Easy, just no thought about anything. So that was it. So I don't think, you know, but does racism live in everybody? I guess that's more of like a sociologist question.
Yeah, beyond us.
Way beyond the scope of this ridiculous show that we do every other week.
So let me ask you this. So our question that we've been asking every 2 weeks, you know, will Hulk Hogan be at WrestleMania? I think we can amend that. Will Hulk Hogan return to the WWE and when?
Oh, yeah. Because we've been asking this question now. Oh, by the way, happy 40th.
Thanks.
Happy 40th, the 40th episode of the Kevin Kelly Show.
I mentioned it. Look at that. That's how locked in we are.
50. When we get to 50, we'll do something.
Yeah, we'll have a big celebration. We'll have Dan go live to the Bunny Ranch in Las Vegas, our dream trip, record live.
Can we get that sponsored?
Yeah.
Okay. Brad will get on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been asking for several weeks the possibilities of Hogan and Austin, respectively, being at WrestleMania this coming springtime in Dallas. And the trend had started to be towards yes for Hogan. And JR, you were pretty strong in the yes category for a while.
And I still think until this came out, he was going to wrestle a match.
Sure, sure.
There was rumors that he was going to fight Cena coming out now. I mean, that's, think of what he cost himself through all this. Besides his image being completely tarnished and wasted and being a racist, he cost himself a lot of money. He had a lifetime gig as the you know, what Vince envisioned him being as far back as like 1992, the face of the WWF and WWE now, to go out on press tours, host Tough Enough, be at WrestleMania, you know, just be that guy that's there when they want to truck someone out to be the face of the promotion in a legendary Goodwill Ambassador role. That's gone. And he probably would have had that job for as long as he wanted. A potential big-time WrestleMania payday is gone. Merchandising's gone. Network, whatever minuscule royalties are coming in from that are gone. You know, like all this stuff he had at a time where I'm sure he still needs to recoup some of the funds he lost. And now what? What does he do? I mean, if he's smart, right, he lays low and does nothing. He goes to, you know, sit in his house and does not try and go to TNA. He doesn't try and go to Global Force. He doesn't try and do any of that stuff, right? I mean, would you agree with that? His best bet is to lay low for a year or so and then hope that everything blows over and Vince can just bring him back?
Yeah, and obviously today was not a good Twitter day for Hogan. And as he's being pranked and he's making, you know, he's putting his foot further into his mouth, making ignorant comments. Yeah, he just needs to completely go away and then hope that he can, you know, reinvent himself and come clean and do the tearful Oprah interview or whatever and get back, you know, in people's good graces. So will he be back for this year's WrestleMania?
I just can't see it. I think it would look like too obvious of a cash in for them. And I'm sure it's a bullet to them, you know, because they're going to sell out the stadium. Now that's what's one. I mean, I don't know how much drawing power Hogan had left anyway, but I don't think he's back by Mania. I do think he's back at some point. I think he needs to delete his Twitter. I think he needs to just go radio silence for a while. He did his apology.
Really, he never really got it either.
Right. Well, he gave his apology was fine. He came out quickly, owned it. He even claims he resigned, that they didn't let him go. Like, all that was fine. And then he should have just shut down his Twitter for a while.
Right. Well, away. I just mean, like, he never got Twitter.
Oh, right. No, definitely.
Like, he was signing all of his tweets HH.
Right. And he would retweet everything, even if it's, like, making fun of him. Like, he didn't understand.
Yeah.
So he needs to just go away from there, because it's exactly. not going to help him at all. And the quicker he disappears and just goes quiet, the more likely he'll be back within, like, a year or two.
All right. Let me ask you this. If I was able to get Hulk Hogan to come on to this show, would you, as the producer of this show, say yes?
So, yeah, because we're not employing him, right? We're not profiting from him. We're not.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, but not really. So we're not.
We're doing it. We're doing this to help our show grow. This sure. is all hypothetical.
Right.
But I come to you and I say, JR, I've got Hogan's number. And I've talked to him and he's wanting to come onto the show to come clean. At least that's what the story would be.
All right. So when are we doing it? If it's like tomorrow, I say probably not, because okay. it feels to me like we're cashing in on it. And we're taking advantage of the situation. If it's like 6 months from now and he's been good and things are dying down and he's looking for a forum to come on and kind of get his, you know, shit back in order, yeah, I'd probably say at that point. If he calls you tomorrow and says, hey, Kev, brother, you know, I want to come on and tell my side of the story, I'm probably going to say no. That's probably not something we want to be on board with. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because we were talking about, like, at Ring of Honor this weekend.
Brad just punched a hole in the wall. What?
They're
turning him down.
Brad is like flipping out. And Dan is like, wait, are they really going to fly me out to the Bunny Ranch? Is that possible for the
Dan's still marking
episode?
Out about Jim Ross having been on the line, let alone if Hogan was over on.
That's funny. But, you know, so we were talking about that. Like, okay, indie promoters, who's going to be the first one to bring Hogan in? And of course, you know, Hogan would have to say yes to it. But the idea is, who would be the first to want to bring him in?
Oh, there'll be some.
It wouldn't shock me if he's already gotten those phone calls.
I mean, like, you're Jeff Jarrett, and you're trying to get global for someone on the map. Is that, you know, is that something, is that a trigger you pull, or is that asking for too much trouble out of the gate?
Again, yeah, what is the... It's risk reward. My grandfather was a racist and taught his dog to chase the mailman. He was not going to get, you know, he was not going to lose any money from this. There was not anybody. He was retired. There wasn't an employer who was going to say, because you've done this horrible racist thing, we can't hire you anymore. You know, ignorance is abound all day, and people don't. You know, people are just allowed to go on because there's no money to be made from it. But a company that's in business like WWE or like anybody else is going to look at the risk reward. And they did that with Hogan. And that's the case for anybody else, whether it's Jarrett's company or anyone else. I can tell you Ring of Honor's not, because First of all, that would never be in our budget. But second of all, we have no interest. It doesn't fit in with what we're doing. But, you know, for a company that's looking for notoriety, that's looking to break out, if you're a shock jock, or if you're a reality show producer, you're loving this. You're hoping to get the camera in front of Hogan's face or get him on the microphone. So there are people who will profit from it.
Well, a big part of the discussion too is WWE being hypocritical, right? Because they've obviously, you know, they employ guys like Michael Hayes. We've, you know, Vince McMahon said the N-word on pay-per-view, and sure, you can absolutely say they're being hypocritical, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have fired Hulk Hogan. I mean, that's been my stance from the start. Everyone's like, well, Vince McMahon said the N-word on a 2005 pay-per-view. Okay, you know, all right, so we should keep Hulk Hogan on the roster then, because Vince McMahon 10 years ago. So, you know, it's just that part
DX,
of me.
I was in the company, DX dressed up in blackface to mock the Nation of Domination.
You know, so what, things can't change? We can't evolve? We're going to hang our hats on stuff that happened decades ago? I mean, that's just like, you know, it's the same argument like with baseball. People don't want replay because we never had replay. Well, you know what? It makes things better. It's made the game better. So we should never evolve. You know, would you like to not to have MRIs because they didn't have them in 1910? You know what I mean? It's like, what do you want? At some point, you have to evolve. And like WWE, whether you want to believe that they evolved or not, this was a step they had to take regardless of what else they've done in the past at all. So my question to you, Kev, though, is where would they have drawn the line? What level of guy saying this would have not been fired? Would John Cena, if this exact scenario happened with him, but sex tape comes out, him and whoever, you know, Kane's wife, whatever, comes out, and Kane had filmed it and the thing comes out, and or whoever, the husband, and it turns out he said these same things and the exact same scenario occurs, do they fire John Cena?
Yes. I think they do. I think there would be hesitancy on their part. It may not be a rush to judgment like there was with Hogan, because, you know, the audio was released at 9 o'clock and he was gone by 9:01.
Right.
Maybe it's a debate. Maybe it's something that takes some time. Maybe they take it under counsel. Maybe they bring in their advisory committee. Maybe they bring in leaders of the African American communities and take the pulse of them. But I think inevitably they do, or they suspend him. And let's face it. No one is ever fired forever. Hogan being fired and stricken from the record and all references pulled from the website, that's for now. But if things change, he'll be back. And it might be a year, 2 years, 5 years, but he could be back. So no one's ever fired forever.
Right.
It's a long suspension. Would Cena be fired? Yeah, probably.
How about Triple H?
Well, that's a slightly different story because he's an officer of the company.
Right, so isn't that worse?
In many respects, it is worse. Yes, because you can always write off, you can always push it off like, well, you know, these independent contractors.
Right.
But him being an officer of the company, the face of the company in many respects, the heir apparent to Vince McMahon. Yeah, the problem is systemic now. It's not the individuals. The problem, you know, the patient is sick because the head is diseased. We must cut off the head of the snake. So, yeah, that would be worse. And very involved and very nasty in a legal fight. Whereas with an independent contractor, it's easy. You scrub his name from the website. He's fired. What? He doesn't work here anymore. Are you kidding? No. But it's tricky.
Like DMC said.
See, now you've brought it all full circle.
It's tricky. Hey, there's a funny story on kayfabenews.com. Hogan's comments deeply hurtful, says Akeem. Anyway, so I wanted to touch on something else, Kev. We're running out of time here. The SummerSlam, as Bret Hart would say, big match coming up, announced so far. Undertaker will take on Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on this?
First, I think it's great. I thought the setup and the build for it was great. And I think it is the perfect way to get Brock Lesnar out of the immediate title picture. Let's go back and have him settle this, you know, settle things with The Undertaker, who's still kind of steamed about, you know, not just losing the unbeaten WrestleMania streak, but also the fact that Paul Heyman has made such hay with it verbally ever since then. So, yeah, I think it's great. Wonderful.
I hate
and
it.
A great attraction. Why?
I think it's awful. I think neither man benefits in any way. I think if Brock Lesnar beats Undertaker again, it really doesn't mean anything. You already beat him once. Like, who cares? If Undertaker wins, it completely unravels the rub from the streak. Where do we get out of him ending the streak? He crushed John Cena and then lost to Seth Rollins. And some great matches in between. But who have we really given the rub to that came from that? And now if he loses to Undertaker, who, while looking in better shape than he did at WrestleMania, was it 29, 30? I haven't lost count. 30 when he lost to Brock.
Yeah, 30. Because right. he beat Bray at 31 and 32. Right. And he's coming up this year in Dallas.
And he looked much better at 31 than he did at 30. And he even looked better at Battleground when he showed up. But still, to me, you cannot have Brock Lesnar. And I'm not a huge believer in the win-loss, like, whatever. Like, if Brock could lose to anyone and still be strong. But Undertaker's kind of on my list of guys he can't really quite lose to. I think we're getting a schmoz. I think we're getting something that's going to set up Mania in some way.
I agree with that.
I do not think Undertaker will pin Brock Lesnar clean.
No, I agree with you there. That, you know, there's been so much conjecture and talk about Paul and whether or not they stay together.
You can't break them up.
I agree, but it's one of the many things to consider.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? But
I don't see the benefits.
They also just announced that it's 4 hours, which is, you know, great, because then Taker can walk
at
a normal pace to the ring and we can get the match in.
I'll be there, so we'll see.
Old joke. Old.
But, yeah, it'll be like the Iron Sheik. But I think I'm not a fan of it. That's all I think. So we'll see. And there's rumors that Sting may get involved somehow.
Oh, yeah, because that's what they're going to do. Are they going to do that at WrestleMania?
Who knows? They could do Undertaker and Seth Rollins. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, maybe they finally do Taker Cena. I mean, they've never done that. That could be the big match that draws on top. That's the one big time. They fought, but not recently in a big time setting. That's the one Mania match they never pulled the trigger on. So I guess that's out there. Brock Rock is the big one you hear a lot being thrown around. I mean, Reigns at some point is going to get his big win. So it doesn't look like Brock will be champion heading to Mania this year. Probably not. So who does Reigns beat? Does Rollins escape? Or do you have Reigns beat Cena at Mania? So where does that go? So, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. Do you think Cena's going to beat Rollins at SummerSlam? I mean, you got to think, if Rollins beats Cena, I think he's probably keeping it till Mania. That would be my guess. This is his big stepping stone.
I'm sure that it's not. I have a feeling that this is one of those great debate issues. And I think that I'm torn, because I think now that Cena has gotten past Kevin Owens, I think you could do that. I think that would make sense. But Rollins is doing great, and he's elevating himself and the title and doing all these things. And if he loses now, is that for naught? And then who does Cena fight after that? So
does Cena keep the U.S. title and win the world title? What happens there?
Yeah.
Or does he lose it first?
Well, you know, listen, I mean, WWE apparently is just trying to pattern themselves after everything that Ring of Honor is doing now, you know. I mean, so that would kind of make sense, which I think is completely ridiculous, by the way. I think that whole idea that they're trying to pattern themselves after Ring of Honor is just laughable.
Yeah,
so.
I don't see that.
What about Vince spending so much time on Tough Enough? Isn't that patient dead? Haven't they done
USA's
enough
not
damage?
Happy. Yeah, USA's not happy. I guess I don't know if it's official. They said Bret Hart was probably going to replace Hogan.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Flair.
I think that was the first one. And then they probably realized that Drunk Flair is not any kind of upgrade over Racist Hogan. So they figured Brett, I guess, at least comes with the least amount of baggage for a legend, as far as legends go. I don't know.
Maybe instead of calling them Hulk and Rick, they could just go by those surnames. That'd be kind of good. You know, Drunk Flair, Racist Hogan.
I mean, Austin would be the savior, right? If they brought him in, but that's not going to happen. Yeah, that show's a mess. They're going through... And you can read Jordan and Isaac Duncan's pieces on PlaceToBeNation.com weekly, but they can't decide which type of reality show they want to be. You can't have viewers voting, and they have like 6 minutes. And my wife watches, and she has pretty low standards of TV.
Now that's just not nice.
No, right? Well, she does, though. Tonight she's watching The Bachelorette finale. That's like her big thing. And Dancing with the Stars. And I mean, she has pretty low level of expectations with TV. Like, she'll watch whatever reality show level stuff, and like 6 minutes, 7 minutes into the Tough Enough, like 2 weeks ago, she's like, this is awful. I mean seriously. And she used to watch the old Tough Enough with me, like way back when you were around, so she was kind of excited about it. She sat down, and we haven't, you know, she's in bed a lot early now with the kids and everything, so we haven't watched a lot of TV in the summer, so she was kind of excited we had something to watch. And like, she gave up after a week. It was like, hey, watch this.
By the way, I saw Patrick from the guy that was eliminated last week. I saw him over the weekend. First, I had met him briefly once before. I had shaken his hand in a Ring of Honor show and said hello to him. And somebody had pointed him out to me. Hey, man, this kid's he's going to go places. He's going to have a career. Okay, good. We'll keep an eye on him. What a nice young man. We chatted for a while on both Friday and Saturday. Him and Lee Green, who won the Shamrock Cup for MCW in Maryland. Two very nice, very talented young men. And Pat, the story on the street that Patrick turned down a developmental deal is completely false. It is completely untrue. He was never offered one, but it was talked about. And it was something to where, yeah, if something was offered, he would have to look at it and see what the financial situation was and if he could afford to do it. But nothing was ever offered, and nothing was ever turned down. So I want to make sure we put that out there. But he's a nice young guy who I think got done wrong. So hopefully
that shows you right there how awful that system is. I mean, it's going to be like ZZ and Sarah Lee are probably going to win this thing, which is just like worst case. I mean, ZZ's fine. He's funny or whatever. But Patrick, to me, scream star. And to let him go off this early, it's just really stupid setup. And, you know, Hogan's gone from the show now, and he was the one that put him in the bottom three. So it's like, if he had waited one more week, maybe he wouldn't be gone.
Well, we obviously know why now, right?
Right. So, yeah.
How about if he came back under a mask, Hogan, as Mr. African America? What do you think?
Probably not going to work. But the...
I'm trying. I'm trying all I can to help Hogan rebuild his image.
Patrick, though, I mean, Mick Foley was like going off on a big time, if you saw that. But it's just a real stupid setup. You can't have fans voting and having 3 or 4 minutes to vote.
Well, the whole concept of Tough Enough is inherently flawed because you cannot grow wrestlers in a lab. You cannot have them become stars on a reality show.
Yeah, but even if the winner fails, you can still have a compelling show. Like the Steve Austin one was phenomenal.
The winner failing is why brand of Tough Enough is dead.
No, you're giving them a chance. That's not why it's dead. It's dead because...
No, it's dead.
No, you're giving them a chance just like anyone you sign to developmental. You're just giving them that developmental slot, and if they make it, they make it. Not every wrestler makes it. It's a cautionary tale. That doesn't mean
reality
the show...
fans, my point of view is they're conditioned by American Idol, that these people become... stars,
oh,
that they become
Survivor
stars.
Then I mean, there's tons of shows where the winner doesn't have to go on to something. I mean, if you go back and watch and listen to the critically acclaimed, you know, level of that Tough Enough that year with Austin, everyone loved it, and everyone was clamoring when they said they're bringing it back, hoping he was going to be part of it. And once they said he wasn't, that's when it shit the bed. That show was really well done, the Austin one, and it was on him. I mean, it was him that did it. But
I think it was that did well because of Austin, and because absence makes the heart grow fonder. It was the first one that had been done in that reality show format since the beginning.
I think if you brought it back this year with that same format as the Hogan one, I mean, as the Austin one, I think it does much better than it is right now.
Well,
that was a good show.
I think they could do different things that would improve it. Yes, I agree with you. But I believe that there is a sector of the audience who didn't even bother to give this show a chance. First of all, I mean, the wrestling audience is down even further than where it was.
Because they're a bunch of idiots. I mean, but seriously, but I mean, there's a sector of the audience that won't get the network for $10 a month.
I know.
With all they
offer. There's a certain sector of the audience that have been conditioned that the results of this show are inconsequential because no one becomes a star from it. No one becomes a star. There, everybody, at least on Survivor, gets 15 minutes of fame.
Well, Andy Levine got 15 minutes of fame. I mean, literally just 15 minutes. But, I mean, that's extreme worst-case scenario where he was awful and then got busted for drugs. I mean, that's kind of beyond them. Like, I think he could have maybe been decent eventually. But to put him out on the live one, he gets, whatever, stunned by Austin. And, you know, they buried him out of the gate like they always do. But I don't think you can judge the process by the results all the time.
Okay.
I think that process could have been successful still.
You're smarter than me.
Just on this.
Do me a favor.
Specific scenario I am.
We got to get Lethal on the horn here in a few minutes. We've got a big show tonight, the 40th episode. We'll be talking to the Ring of Honor World Champion, the Ring of Honor World Television Champion, Jay Lethal, who had an amazing 60-minute match this past Friday in Baltimore at Death Before Dishonor against Roderick Strong, which you can get right now on replay at ROHWrestling.com. We'll talk to our pal Roger Morissette. We'll be talking sports with the Cowboy later on. And we'll do some trending stories as well. But before we get Lethal on the horn, JR, can you please, please tell everybody where they can find the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week?
Sure, you can subscribe on the Kevin Kelly Show dedicated feed on iTunes, and all the latest episodes will automatically download to your Apple devices. In addition, you can visit PlaceMedia.com, click the Kevin Kelly Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. You can also visit Stitcher.com, subscribe to the Place to Be podcast, or download the Place to Be Nation podcast app at placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Place2BNation, and at Real Kevin Kelly. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/KevinKellyShowPTBN. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can email us at Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceMedia.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
We're back on the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. You can download us each and every episode on iTunes as well, and the numbers have been growing by leaps and bounds, and we expect the number to jump significantly because of our guest at this time. It's probably one of the most high-profile guests we've had when you think about what he's done. Not only is our guest the Ring of Honor World Television Champion and has held the title for more days than any other champion in ROH history, but he's also Ring of Honor World Champion and the first man to hold both titles simultaneously. and he's amazing. He just came off a 60-minute match this past Friday at Death Before Dishonor. He's Jay Lethal. He's our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. Man, it is a pleasure to have you here on the show, man. How you doing?
What an introduction. It almost seems unreal for me. But thanks for having me, Kevin. I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
You, what a night Friday was. It was, I've called, I don't know, thousands of matches over the past 24 years. It was the first match I've ever called that went 60-minute draw. And it was the fastest. Nigel Carino and I all said to ourselves, this is the fastest 60 minutes ever. I can't believe how fast it went. Did it go fast for you, or was it a long 60?
No, it was a long 60, definitely a long 60. Also, you know, nowadays, the way that professional wrestling, the state it's in, it's risky business to have a match as long as the one we had this weekend. You really got to have, from a company standpoint, trust. A lot of trust in the people you're putting in the ring in that position. And Roderick Strong and myself are two of the greatest wrestlers who are active wrestlers at this moment. So I think the office, the powers that be who actually had that match take place, I think they were satisfied. I hope they were satisfied with the results. I'm not that big of a dirt sheets guy. Nowadays it's all about Twitter, you know, so I've been getting nothing but great reviews on Twitter for the match that we just had, which was really cool to hear about.
Yeah, it was again, very well deserved. And it, again, very risky situation. Anything could have happened along the way, but, again, agree with the sentiments that probably no two better guys to have in that spot than you and Roddy. But think about this, though. You came off of, and Carino and I were laughing. We've debated back and forth ever since Best in the World. Okay, well, Best in the World, we both said, was the best world title match that we had ever called. And now it's like, so now 1 month later, here's Lethal. Changing the conversation and making us doubt our choice. You didn't even give us much time to bask in that. It's like, wait, which was better, the draw or the win over Briscoe? Damn it!
Oh, but man, that's awesome to even hear. That's awesome to even hear you say that.
And really, we didn't. And both of us said, because it was our instant gut reaction. And I guess that's human nature, right? Oh my gosh, that was the best. You know,
right.
I just saw, you know, whatever movie. Oh, that was the best movie ever, you know. But it was like, okay, instant gut reaction. Best in the World was the best world title match we had called. Then the next day it was like, gosh, we really don't want to say that. But dang it, I can't change my opinion yet. How do you feel a week later, Steve? I still feel the same way. Yeah, so do I. Let's go back to Best in the World, because it was a lot different than what we had this past Friday at Death Before Dishonor. To me, the coolest dynamic, not just the fact that you became the world champion for the first time, but that your mom and dad were there, and Jay's parents were across the way, diagonally opposite of them. What does that mean to have your parents be such a big part of your career and your life?
That having my parents there was actually the biggest piece of the puzzle that makes up the fact that, one, I'm even a professional wrestler today, but two, the fact that I was actually able to capture the Ring of Honor World Championship, to be the number one man of a company known around the world for its wrestling. One of the biggest puzzle pieces was having my parents there. And it really did something to me when, after the show was off the air and I'm giving my little speech, to look over at my dad, who was legit crying because he was so happy for his son. Man, that just tore me up inside. It was amazing. It let me know that this whole ride has been worth it, just if not for that moment alone. not many people know, but for the first, I'm going to say 4.5 to 5 years of my professional wrestling career, my parents went to every single wrestling show that I had. I talk about 15, 16-hour car rides. They went to every single wrestling show that I had, which was crazy. Nowadays, whenever I see them, they always talk about, oh, we miss being on the road, because they haven't been on the road. And it's funny, I can say my parents haven't been on the road. You know? My parents haven't been on the road for about 10 years now, but they still talk about how they miss it. Every single weekend, they were on the road with me, and it made it all worth it, almost like it came all full circle. To have them at ring, in the arena, at least, during what I consider to be the biggest moment of my life. Man, it was, like I said, the biggest piece of that puzzle was having them there.
I remember, you and I talked a couple of years ago when you wrestled, I guess, Steen the first time. And I think it was it in Rahway? And I was like, how do you feel about main eventing and the world title match? And it was kind of a gaga match. So you said it really didn't have that feel. But mm-hmm. How nervous were you going into Best in the World?
I was legit terrified. I remember being in Ring of Honor when guys like Samoa Joe and Brian Danielson and even Austin Aries would give their speech after winning the championship, like CM Punk's speech after winning or CM Punk's speech after losing or leaving for the final time. I can remember thinking, one of these days it'd be cool if I get to have my speech, you know. But in order to do that, man, so much pressure. I'd have to live up to the hype of everyone who's ever held that championship to get to deliver my speech, which was terrifying to me, because when I was in Ring of Honor the first time, I really felt like I didn't belong there. I felt like I didn't know enough to keep up with everyone else. Somehow I had slipped through the cracks, and someone allowed me to be there, and maybe they weren't paying attention to the little bit of knowledge that I had. It was just, I paled in comparison, I felt, to everyone else. And that made me super nervous too, thinking about, well, now you're going to have to live up to that. You know, everyone has held that championship. But Kevin, I tell you what, someone asked me, what's one of your goals? What now is left for Jay Lethal? And to be quite honest, what I would love to do, and this is going to be extremely hard, I know it, but what I would love to do is, just like how I held the television championship, throughout this whole time, I can't remember a time when someone said, oh, Jay Lethal is the Ring of Honor television championship, just as good of a champion as, and then mentioned someone else who has had that championship. I feel like no one has mentioned who else has had it, because I am doing such a good job with it, not to toot my own horn. But if I could do that, Kevin, with the world championship, if what I'm doing is so unique or interesting or captivating that they never once want to mention, oh, he's a good champion like this guy, or he's just as good as this champion was. If I can get them to, throughout this title reign, to not mention anyone else who has had it except for the current holder, then I think my life will be complete.
Well, it's you certainly are on the path to writing your own legacy as far as championship honors are concerned, because obviously you must be doing something good. You're the television champion. You're the world champion. You got the world by the balls right now. You're hanging with the star, Dancing with the Stars. I mean, what's going on there? What's that young lady's name? I was trying to find it online as we were talking. I can't find it, but fans may not know this, but apparently one of the main dancers on Dancing with the Stars, a huge Jay Lethal fan, and like seek them out on Twitter. And I think they're a thing now. So get ready.
Karina Smirnoff. I actually met her in the green room before one of my news appearances. She was she was up after me. But yeah, it's like, I really don't think that all this has hit me. Like, I'm rubbing elbows with celebrities, and I've had countless drinks in a bar with Ric Flair. I've gotten to hang out and joked around with Kevin Nash and Kurt Angle, and countless other guys, Hulk Hogan, whether he be in a good light right now or not. I really don't think it's hit me yet, just exactly what I've been able to accomplish and everything that I've done in what some people may call a short period of time. I think the day that I will finally realize everything that I've done will be one of those days where I can no longer wrestle. So I'm sitting at home with a grandson talking about, back in my day, maybe. And then all of a sudden I'll have an epiphany and it's a revelation looking back on everything that I did. And then my brain will explode. And then that'll be the life of Jay Lethal.
That would be how it all ends. Well, we can all aspire to that. Listen, you mentioned his name, and let's talk about it, because we spent the whole first part of the show kind of talking about Hulk Hogan. It's a story that's taken over not just wrestling, but anywhere in the news and sports and pop culture world now. What are your thoughts? Can you kind of put your own personal feelings on that? I mean, you know the man personally. You've worked with him. How would you, I'm sure people have asked you, hey, what do you think about Hulk Hogan? That's pretty much what I would ask you. What do you think about Hulk Hogan?
So I didn't hear the actual tapes of the quotes that I'm seeing. I didn't hear these actually come out of his mouth, which, I mean, would have killed me, I'm sure. But just knowing the fact that some of this is true, it actually does break my heart. I mean, I try to stay away from racial issues as much as possible, just because it in my opinion, it never really leads to anything extremely positive. When you bring up any kind of racial issue, someone, it's going to negatively affect someone. In some way, it's not like singing the happy birthday song where everyone who hears it is joyous. This, some people will be joyous, and maybe it'll rub some people the wrong way. With that said, I would like it to be known that I do understand and realize, and I'm so grateful for some of the things I have been able to accomplish as an African-American wrestler. I am extremely grateful that I am the first African American Ring of Honor World Champion. I'm so grateful to be able to do what I want storyline and gimmick wise in the world of professional wrestling at this point, especially working for Ring of Honor, which I feel is one of the greatest wrestling companies in the world, without being stereotyped into a certain specific kind of a role. With that said, I worked with Hulk Hogan. It was an honor to meet and work with him. But hearing some of the things that, like I said, I didn't hear them come from him. I didn't hear the actual tape. All I'm seeing is quotes and things that he supposedly had said. And it breaks my heart to hear it. It really does. And you know, for some of that stuff, there's no going back. There's no going back from it. You can't take it back, because the people have heard it. And it's like, man, it's just it's a really sucky situation for him. But yeah, when I heard some of the things that he had said, it really did hurt, especially since, for most people, especially from my generation, not only my generation, but I'm just speaking because this is the generation I'm in, our love for professional wrestling, Hulk Hogan, had something to do with it. So my world is wrapped around professional wrestling, and part of that reason is due to Hulk Hogan and what he has done for and in the business. Therefore, like I said, hearing some of those things after getting to work with him and meet the person that helped create your love for this business, it was a little heartbreaking.
I was like, wow, he's a 61-year-old man who was born and raised in Florida. For me, it wasn't shocking that someone of his age, where he comes from, might have those feelings in his heart. You would hope that he would have been able to change his viewpoints, because having traveled the world and worked with so many different people, a lot of times because of segregation, they didn't know, they didn't go to school with, they didn't have friends with or play with, kids that were different than them. You thought Hulk might have been different, but obviously, that is not the case. And we see examples like that all the time. But I've always been impressed, Jay, with you, with your kind of approach to this, and in regards to like some of the things that we've talked about to some of the guys at the tryout camps. And not to get into specifics, but you have a very good finger on the pulse of that. And it's not a sensitivity, but it's an awareness of kind of the big picture of things that maybe me or other people might take for granted or look past. But when you say, no, I'm not so sure about this because of this particular reason, you've opened up my eyes on more than one occasion. And I thank you for that, because that's how we all learn. We all learn from each other. That's the way I grew up. I was telling the guys at the early part of the show, two of my buddies grew up in the apartment that I lived in New York. They were, Walter Williams and Junior Jackson, man, they were two of my best friends. And it was the first time I think my dad had ever seen, it was like the first time he'd ever seen black people when I brought my buddies home. And I was like, no, these are my guys. I didn't even see color. It wasn't, they're just my friends. We're 7 or 8 years old. It's just how we think about it. You know what I mean? It's weird. But thank you for what you've shown me.
Right.
I've learned some good things.
Right. But we still, like you said, you weren't too surprised because of where Hogan was brought up and the time and everything. So with that said, it's just a matter of time. I guess, sadly, it's sort of like a sad thing to think about or say, but is it just a matter of time before someone else slips up?
Yeah.
You never know. You think you know someone, but we don't really know them until we can see them behind their closed doors, not just backstage or at an after party for a show. Like I said, I was heartbroken. But then again, when you think about it, I never really knew Hulk Hogan or Terry Bollea. I never really knew them, because you don't really know someone until you see them behind closed doors, and not just one time either. It takes a while to know somebody. But we never really knew him, I'm sure he's not the only one who has these views just because of the type of world we live in. But is it just a matter of time, Kevin, before someone else slips up and now they're in the boat with Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, and like you said, there is no coming back. We see it with, and not to get down, but we see it like in the NFL with cases of domestic violence and Ray Rice now petitioning, different teams to try to get back into the league. And it seems like a lot of doors are being closed to him. So who knows, mm-hmm. But either way, it's sad. And, maybe again, like with any tragedy, maybe somebody will learn lessons. I know I talked to a lot of the young guys that were backstage at the shows this weekend. Like, hey, man, listen, whatever you do and say, trust me, it's going to get reported and it's going to get recorded and somebody's going to know your business. So you better be mindful of anything you do or say, and whatever's in your heart is going to come out.
100%.
So everybody's got to be careful. You got to be careful, Jay Leith. You can't be letting all that business out. That's. But hey,
yeah, you're right. I gotta be careful.
Talk to me real quick. Yeah, you gotta mind your business. And that's why you got Truth Martini, right? Because Truth keeps all that straight. He has been a hell of a assistant to you, and I mean that's not the right word, but a friend and somebody that you have bonded with. And I mean, tell me about your relationship with Truth, who's been just an incredible boon to your career.
Truth Martini. I actually didn't know Truth Martini existed until my second run here in Ring of Honor. And boy, when the minute I saw him, to say the least, almost was like love at first sight. The minute I saw him on camera, the way he was acting, it brought something out of me. And what it brought out of me was the fact that all these years I had wanted to be, and not to give away too much of wrestling, Kevin, but all these years I had wanted to be the bad guy. Because it was so cool to be bad sometimes. Even with my run in TNA when I played the Black Machismo, I had wanted to be the bad guy who yells at SoCal Val and tells her, "You're standing on the wrong side of the ring, stand over here," and like grab her by the arm and pull her here. And that was my ultimate vision for it. But I guess due to the fact that I'm such a good guy, it didn't work out that way. They saw it a different way, so we ran with it a different way. So for all those years, all the wrestling years that I ever had, which at that point was about 14, 13, I had been the good guy, and I had so badly wanted to be on the other side of the track, so to speak, as Ric Flair would say, "You've jumped to the other side of the track." So I was ready to jump to the other side of the track, and when I saw Truth Martini, and I saw his work for the first time, I said, "Oh, this would be great." And of course, it didn't happen for a little bit. But then the cards would finally align perfectly. And then I'd be with Truth Martini. And I tell you, I'm having the time of my life. I think in wrestling, when it comes to wrestling, he's a genius. Outside of wrestling, people may think he's a little weird for his views. He's definitely a weird guy. But inside of wrestling, I think he's a genius. I'm in love with his work, and I think me and him together, and I've heard this before, "Oh, you don't really need Truth Martini." I feel like I could survive without Truth Martini, but together, I mean, we just create this magical thing, and he's just amazing. He's just, to answer your question, he's amazing.
And again, the great appreciation for Truth is, I think now, everybody is starting to get to see it. And we, at first, you know, here he was and the, you know, a manager, the manager. Now he's with Lethal and he's in such a prominent spot that, that prominence, I think, is really, and we're getting to see the best of his work. And I agree with you. He really is amazing. The one thing that a lot of people, of course, always know with Jay Lethal, not just great wrestler, all this, but the ability to do these voices and the impressions that you've done, which was a part of your wrestling career for such a long time. Now, do you just do wrestling voices so well, or are you like the person who can hear a voice in a movie or on a TV show and you can bring that back? Tell me about some of that talent that you have, because it really is amazing.
Well, I attribute it to just hearing it for years and years and years. If I've heard someone for years and years, I think then I've got this good impression or imitation of them, then I can sound like them. It just so happens that while growing up, shaping my love for professional wrestling, I paid closer attention to certain guys, i.e., the Macho Man, Randy Savage, and Ric Flair, also Jimmy Hart. But yeah, some of these guys, they stick out in my mind, and I can't think of life without those guys because I focused on them for so long. And part of it in the beginning wasn't even that I tried to focus on them. They were just so good at what they did. They stood out. to me. And that is part of how I can do these great impressions. Kevin, I don't know if you know this, but the Macho Man impression that I can do, I've always been able to do that one. And it was kind of widely known throughout the locker room anyway that I could do the Macho Man impression. Not too many people know that the way that my Ric Flair impression came about, the funny thing is I didn't even know that I could do a Ric Flair impression. The way I found out was I was with TNA at the time, and we had a UK tour. We were touring the UK, and on one of our off days, we all went to the bar. So I'm at the bar with the Dudley Boys. Like I said, I get to hang out with all these guys, and it just hasn't hit me yet. But I'm in the bar with the Dudley Boys and Mr. Anderson. We're all at the whole locker room just hanging out. And apparently I had a few too many drinks. And after a couple of drinks, I started to do this Ric Flair impression, which I didn't even realize or know about until the next morning when I got onto the bus. Everyone was wooing at me and telling me to do the Ric Flair. I said, earlier was telling me, what's wrong with do Ric Flair? Then I put two and two together. I got drunk. I did this Ric Flair impression. Everyone loves it. Must be good. So let's see what I got. So then I attempted to do a Ric Flair impression, kind of hungover slash sober. And it was actually pretty good. So I didn't even know that I had this Ric Flair impression in me until a couple drinks. So now whenever someone asks, well, who else can you do? And I always reply, well, do you have time to go that we can find out?
And, you know, again, maybe we could ply you with drinks and we can, you know, kind of slide here. Here's a piece of paper. Here, read this name. See if you can do this impression. But you have to be bombed to do it. So I don't know if that's the thing you want to repeat a lot. But the Flair thing, being drunk, is so, you know, again, because Flair in the bar with the, you know, wine and buying shots for the entire bar and naching it up and taking his pants off. I mean, that's quintessential Ric Flair.
Right. How ironic.
Now, did the pants?
I didn't find out until I.
Yeah, did.
No, my pants stayed on.
Did the pants stay on? The pants stayed on. Okay, because that's a big part there. Reggie's, CNN Center back in the day, many, many pantsless Ric Flair's scenes in that bar. So that's great stuff. I love it. Now, so, okay, the Macho Man to me and your match against Delirious, which was on the Hoopla show, which everybody needs to go back and seek out. Because On Demand is there, and it was the main event, and it was actually kind of an homage to a match that meant a lot to both of you. Tell me about that, how that all came together.
Oh yeah, this was like our tribute to the professional wrestling world, who has allowed us to live this amazing life. We get to travel the world and like you said, this particular match was such a pivotal moment for our shaping our love for the business. So these Night of Hoopla, Ring of Honor shows, it's a bit more relaxed than the actual Ring of Honor shows. There's a bit more fun at these shows. Relaxed gimmicks, storylines aren't taken super seriously. Sometimes the fan needs just a show with his favorite wrestlers, but just like to unwind, you know, they don't need to be forced to stay in character in this storyline and everything. It's just all around fun, I feel anyway. So one of the coolest things is I got to wrestle Delirious, who was a big Ultimate Warrior fan. Of course, me being a big Macho Man fan, instantly we started thinking of parts of the match that happened between Warrior and Savage. One of the coolest things that I've ever done, one of the coolest things, is Delirious actually came up with the idea to recreate the match between warrior and savage. And then we took it a step further by really, really wanting to entertain the people who attended the show, and going a step further and verbatim, move for move, hold for hold, doing the exact match that Warrior and Savage did from their famous bout that had Savage exiting wrestling for a little while, at least to do commentary anyway. One of the coolest things that I thought could have happened, but we couldn't do because of copyright issues and such, boo, 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 was I thought it would have been amazing if we, over the PA system, because we were going to be doing the match hold for hold, exactly how they did it, I thought it would have been amazing to have, over the loudspeaker, over the PA system, have the commentary between Monsoon and Heenan play live, because we were going to be doing the match exactly how they did it, which was the entertaining part of it. But because of copyright issues and the fact that we're going to be selling this DVD and such, we couldn't do that. But that would have put it over the top for me. If you ask me, that really, really made it. But it did get made, because we just got to live out a childhood dream, you know. Like I said, Delirious being a big fan of the Ultimate Warrior, me being a big fan of Savage. This was awesome. And, like I said, I hope I'm not giving away too much of wrestling, the business, but a lot of times it's like putting matches together. This one was easy because this match was already put together years prior, before we even started wrestling. So that made it even easier, and it made it a fun night. It was just amazing. It was amazing. But yeah, could you imagine, Kevin, if we had the commentary played live, loud, of Monsoon and Heenan while we were doing that? That would have been insane.
It would have been so great. Absolutely. Were you, and of course, about, you know, probably about 5 or 6 minutes into the match, you know, people really started to get it. Were you surprised at how they got it?
No, I was not surprised. I knew that they would get it eventually. What I was surprised at was how fast they got it. I didn't think they would catch on as fast as they did. That was very entertaining and heartwarming. And it really, as a professional wrestler, man, it really made me feel like, see, I'm not alone. You know, I'm not the only one who pays so much attention to detail in these matches that happened years ago. And it just took 3-4 minutes for the people sitting here to watch to realize exactly what was going on. Everyone is connecting. It's such a great feeling.
Yeah, that was a special night, no doubt. And the Night of Hoopla and all of those things, go to ROHWrestling.com and seek it out if you haven't done it. And trust me, you'll love it. It was the main event of the show. And it's one of those things that you just have to see in order to believe. So of course, Jay, you've got, you know, all your busy Ring of Honor commitments. You got the Dancing with the Stars lady falling on her feet, just swooning over you, seeing you in the green room. That's it. She's just losing her mind over Lethal. But you got, are you training people now? Is that the word on the street? You've got your own wrestling school set up and you're doing the thing now?
I am. I have my own wrestling school set up here in Tampa, Florida, not too far from my house. Man, I love it. And you know what the funny part is, Kevin? I think that it's teaching people something that I know that they don't know. That's what I'm in love with. So if I was this great math wizard or like some great biologist, I would still have a school dedicated to teaching somebody something that I knew a tremendous amount about and they didn't. It just so happens that the thing that I know a good deal about is professional wrestling. But with that said, yes, I have a wrestling school down here in Florida. I'm on my fourth class right now. and it's going great. I love it. I'm in love with teaching someone something who knows nothing about what I know and seeing the progression of them learning more and more and seeing the excitement. Because to get into professional wrestling, most of the people they've been fans for years, so they dream about this moment of being in the ring and being taught how to do it. And it's something about seeing their eyes light up or seeing the excitement in their face because they're about to do something that they have only dreamed about for years. Man, it's such a cool moment that you get to help shape someone's wrestling career, or at least the start of it anyway.
You trained at one of the more nondescript locations. Mike Morgan was your trainer at the ACE school there in New Jersey. And you had a lot of teachers and trainers along the way. But whose style as a teacher, as a trainer, would you say you probably most emulate? Who do you kind of bring with you the most to your classes?
Actually, I trained for Mike Morgan. I didn't train under him. Mike Morgan was a buddy of mine who I met in Jersey. He ran a wrestling promotion and an open gym. And I was there often, and then he asked me if I wanted to be a trainer there. And then we became
Oh, I got the story all wrong then.
Yeah. In fact, one of the trainees that I trained at Mike Morgan's facility while I was his head trainer in New Jersey was AJ Lee.
That's right.
But to answer your question, which style of trainers, because I did have a few trainers. There's been a few people I've trained under. But I most emulate my training regiment after Mikey Whipwreck, who paid so much attention to detail and was a big stickler for safety. Just above and beyond the call of duty for when it comes to safety. You'd learn a move 4, 5, 6 different ways just so you can be sure that it's 100% safe, unlike some of the schools that I've been to where they teach you one way and then they move on to the next thing. And then they teach you how to do this one way and then move on to the next thing. And not just in wrestling, but a lot of times in life, there's more than one way to do things. And wouldn't you want to know every single way so that you could be as best as you possibly can? But yeah, so to answer your question, I would say that I bring more of the Mikey Whipwreck style of training to my school.
Well, Mikey, of course, had a great reputation, still does as a trainer, and that's a good person to emulate. We'll be doing another ROH tryout camp in the fall, probably in October. We were talking about that today, so. So that'll be another great time, and you've been a part of all of those training classes and the big teaching weekends, so that's always fun. Now, next up for you, we've got the rematch coming up with Roderick Strong in Philly. Is there pressure because of what you did was so magical and worked so well at Death Before Dishonor to kind of recreate some of that magic, or are you just you trust in yourself and you trust in your opponent, and everything's going to be all right? How do you feel about that?
Great question. No pressure at all. For me, as a professional wrestler, to me, the pressure is always in the first match. And I can see the argument, well, that wasn't your first match with Roddy wrestling before. But this was my first match with him, with me being the world champion. So to me, the pressure is always in the first match that you have with someone. So for me, the pressure is there for most of my opponents now because I'm the world champion. Like I said, I always get that. I feel the pressure to deliver in that first match, especially. And like I said, I'm a new person now that I have the Ring of Honor World Championship. So if I were to, let's say, wrestle Jay Briscoe, I would feel no pressure because we've had that match already. My rematch with Roderick Strong, I honestly feel no pressure because we've had that match already. But moving on to some of my other opponents, I will feel a little pressure to deliver because I feel like it's our first match, me being the world champion.
Well, it's gonna be great to see. That's in Philadelphia on August 21st. My gosh. And then the following night, MCU Park in Brooklyn, New York. Field of Honor tickets are on sale for both events now at ROHWrestling.com. And Lethal's a big star, folks. We don't mess around here. We bring the heavy hitters. This is our 40th episode. Nothing but big stars. That's why we got Lethal. That's where. Oh man.
Let's pull out a special story since it's the 40th episode. And you know, in this world of professional wrestling, what gets the most buzz, sadly, is always some kind of negative story. I'll kind of share a little negative story because it's not so much negative. It actually turns positive, especially since I didn't quit or give up. But one thing, let's see, I'll go into... training with Mikey Whipwreck was great. I loved it. But sometimes the ECW guys would come in and beat us up. And I remember telling Taz, he beat this one kid, Luke, up pretty badly. And I remember telling him when I started training with Mikey Whipwreck, I heard stories of Taz beating this kid up. So I would fear for my life every time the door opened that it was Taz coming in to rough us up, to beat us up. And he actually got a big kick out of that. But I actually got beat up or roughed up or whatever you want to call it by Roadkill, who, of course, after the incident, I hated his guts. Roadkill attempted to beat me up for, and I'll just lay out the situation here. I was in the ring training with this kid named, we all called him Burger. Oddly enough, no relation to Cheeseburger. But we all called him Burger. And Burger and I were in the ring. We were trying some MMA stuff. And we were trying to work on our submission wrestling, I remember. So we said, okay, well, we won't stop until one of us taps out. So Burger and I are in the ring working on our submission stuff. And throughout one of these submissions, I had Burger in a front face lock. If you don't know it, I'm sorry. But for one of the moves I had Burger in, my shoulders just so happened to be on the ground. But it didn't matter because we weren't working on pins. We were working on our submission game, so to speak. Like, we didn't really know what the hell we were doing anyway. So that's another story. So Roadkill comes in, sees my shoulders on the ground, and goes, 1, 2, 3, get out, you lost. And as politely as I can, because everyone who knows me knows I'm a polite guy, I would never disrespect someone who's done so much more in this business than I have. But I tried to politely as I can explain to him, oh, we weren't doing pins. We were just working on our submission stuff. And the minute I said that, he yelled at me, told me that I talked too much. I remember him rolling in and like a real dickhead, like splashing me with all of his weight, stomping me, not as hard as he could, I'm sure, because he could have sent me to the hospital, but stomping me very, very hard. What else did he do? He gave me these clubs to the side of the head, very reckless and unprotected, just not trying to take care of me at all. He was obviously angry and upset. And I always say, like, well, that's a negative story. To this day, I hate Roadkill's guts. Even if he were upset at me, that's still never not the way he is. Someone thinks that you're trying to work with them, they're giving you their body, and you're trying to be a dick about it. Well, anyway, I didn't quit, and I didn't give up at that moment, even though I realized what was going on. I can't leave. I got to be tough. I don't want anyone to think that I'm just anything less of a man if I beg for mercy or try to get out. So that lasted about 10 seconds, 10, 15 seconds, but it felt like 5 minutes to me, of course. But the one thing I took from that is I have never and I will never, especially at training, when teaching someone how to do this great and fun thing called professional wrestling, I'll never take advantage of someone. I mean, if you want to fight, if you're upset at me, ask me to go outside and we can handle it there, you know, not in a professional wrestling setting where we're in the ring where I'm supposed to let you do this move to me and you purposely do it rougher than it should be or harder than it should be. But yeah, so hopefully that's a good story for you. The 40th episode, like I said, unfortunately in the wrestling business, the coolest stories, the stories that get the most buzz, is anything negative, unfortunately. And that's like that for a lot of things nowadays. But that negative little story actually turns positive. Like I said, I'd never do that. I make sure that everyone is protected, especially when they're learning, especially at my school. I go above and beyond to make sure that safety comes first, and everyone is human. If you have a problem with someone, it's settled outside of the ring and never inside. But that's my story.
I'm going to do that at work tomorrow at the office. I'm going to take people outside and settle my issues instead of wanting to rough them up at in the cube. That's been my problem, Jay Lethal. Hey, so if I'm a neophyte, if I'm a newbie and I want to get into wrestling, but I don't know how, and I've just heard this interview with Jay Lethal and it's like, wow, this sounds amazing. I want to do this. How can people find you and your school so they can investigate whether or not they want you to be their trainer?
Oh, great question, Kevin Kelly. All they would have to do is either go to my website, which is thelethalj.com. They could send me a message on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is @thelethalj. And J is spelled out J-A-Y, not just the letter J. They can also go to this website called UproarWrestling.com. Actually, it's UproarProWrestling.com. Sorry. I've actually partnered up with an indie promotion down here in Florida so that once I'm done training you, you automatically have a wrestling promotion who will book you on shows, because not too many people realize once you are trained and you become a professional wrestler, to get those first few bookings, that's one of the toughest things to do. And we kind of already have that one in the bag. If you train with me, the minute you're done, you already have this wrestling promotion willing and ready to book you to help you hone your craft or become a better wrestler. So one more time, that's UproarProWrestling.com or TheLethalJ.com, or you can send me a tweet. My Twitter handle is @TheLethalJ. I have my Facebook. You can Facebook me. I have a Jay Lethal Facebook. The world nowadays is surrounded by social media, so it's always cool. There's always a way to get a hold of somebody.
Yeah, and especially if you're on Dancing with the Stars and you see Jay Lethal in the green room, double leg dives you. That's what happened. I heard all about it. Well, hey, listen, I just hope I get invited to the wedding whenever that is, because that will be something else.
Her name is Karina Smirnoff. Just a beautiful. She's absolutely beautiful. I don't watch Dancing with the Stars, and I remember posting some pictures because she wanted to take a picture with the belt, and I remember Steve Corino losing his mind because he's actually a big fan of Dancing with the Stars, and he knew all about this woman who I unfortunately didn't know, but I have been researching now because, like I said, when I met her, she's absolutely beautiful, great shape, great dancer. But yeah, Jay Lethal is a little smitten. Maybe I'll ask Karina to join the House of Truth.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. I would love it.
We could dance to the ring.
Oh, that's exactly what the program needs. That's all we need. Well, Jay, hey, listen, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for coming on the show. And thanks for making my job so easy as a commentator, because what you do each and every time, no matter the opponent, no matter the situation, you just make my storytelling abilities come out, because, again, what you put forth is so great. So thanks for all of that. You. I appreciate that. And just keep doing the thing, man. You got it. You're on the way.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. If anybody's listening, thinking about coming to my wrestling school, just do me a favor before you do. Send a roadkill a message. Thanks for beating up Jay Lethal to make my training better.
Yeah, that's right. They will be sure to thank. We'll scratch Roadkill off the potential guest list. He's right out, not coming on the Kevin Kelly Show. And we'll be back with more on the Kevin Kelly Show right after this.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
It's time for Trending Stories right here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
All right, we're back here on the Kevin Kelly Show, episode 40 on the Place to Be Nation, our website, home, placetobenation.com. We'll do Trending Stories here in a few minutes, and we've got a lot of stuff going on. We ran a little long with Jay Lethal, but he was awesome and had some great stories for us and gave us some great insights. So now, I know, JR, that before we do trending, there was something like really important that you wanted to tell everybody.
Hot off the presses at placemanation.com, Kevin Kelly. Brand new podcast, debut episode, Between the Sheets, number one. Our buddy Chris Zellner, who also hosts the Exile on Bad Street podcast here at PTBN, joined by David Bixenspan and Todd Martin of the Pro Wrestling Torch. And what this is going to be is they're going to do a This Week in Wrestling kind of show, but like back in the day, old school. So this first episode looked at July 20th to 26th of 1989. So they go through all the different newsletters that were out at the time. They go through the results of the big show. So they break down the Great American Bash 1989, rumors of a Bam Bam Bigelow Mike Tyson match, the rise of Kenta Kobashi, AWA Tag Team Challenge Series, the Laugh Olympics, all kinds of things going on. So be sure to check that out. It's a great episode. I was listening to it earlier while cutting the grass. Chris is awesome. If you haven't heard Exile on Bad Street as well, that is awesome. And Bix is always great, and Todd Martin is very good here as well. So be sure to check that out. Just wanted to get a quick plug in for that brand new show.
And very worthwhile. Three smart guys, three entertaining guys that know their stuff. Mm-hmm. So make sure you check that out. There's such a good lineup on PTBN, but that one is definitely worth listening, and it's brand new. So,
and we'll break a little news here too, Kev. So we got a new series coming, written series, coming out this week. Hopefully, it's five of us: myself, Dan McGinn, our buddy Brad Woodling, Chad Campbell, and Jason Greenhouse are taking PTBN's excellent WWE Network adventure. Kevin Kelly, do you know what that is?
No, what is it? Tell me all about it.
So we have built a list, and we are going to watch. We're going to attempt to watch everything chronologically, from the oldest piece of material on the network through the newest, eventually. And so we're starting with the house show from Madison Square Garden in 1975. And we're moving forward through the years. We're going to watch things as they occurred in real time chronologically. So we're going to do very brief bullet-style reviews. They're not going to be big blown-out reviews. They're just going to be like basically notes of what we watched. We'll give a final grade of everything. So it's quite the undertaking. We're not going to have a set schedule because we're four busy guys and Dan. So we're going to be out there doing that, and we're really looking forward to it. Dan and I have been kind of chatting as we're watching the first couple, and they've been interesting. So look for that. Hopefully this week will be the first one, and then moving forward, again, PTBN's excellent WWE Network adventure.
And you can't go like 5 minutes without throwing a shot at McGinn.
Well, it's been like 45.
That's because we had Lethal on. It was a good interview.
Yeah, it was. It was a great interview.
But yeah, that'll be an interesting read. I would love to see your take on things chronologically, watching everything on the network. Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be interesting. And by the way, I give Dan McGinn the weekend of his life last weekend. I don't want to hear it.
Tell me about it quickly.
It was a great time. Dan, you can come in, I think. Rarely heard on the show, but he came in on Saturday, had my big yearly fiesta here, St. Mary's Day extravaganza on Saturday. He stayed over Sunday. Spent the day at my aunt's pool. We played some wiffle ball, played some sort of pool volleyball game. Then we got a shitload of Bonehead's wings. We watched Battleground. Then he went home. He went home Monday morning. But he said he had a great time, Dan. Is that true?
I did have a great time. I had a hard root beer for the first time, which was excellent. And I crushed a home run. It was a monumental blast.
Garbage time.
It was just fantastic. It was
garbage
like the prettiest,
time. Chris Capuano meatball over the plate. I threw
prettiest swing you've ever seen. Just Titanic. The ball is still traveling to Kevin Kelly. It was just magnificent. And then
you mean like most of A-Rod's career, a lot of garbage time home runs.
Oh, please. What about the one he just hit tonight on his birthday to give the Yankees a lead?
Dude, he's so on the gas.
Good. At least it's paying off. It sucks when
no,
he's on the gas.
No, it's not good.
It sucks when he's on the gas and he sucks. Like when he doesn't hit well and he's on the gas. That's when it's useless. If you're on the gas, at least make it count.
Let me ask you this. How many home runs did he hit last year?
None.
Right. Because he was what?
He was rehabbing his injured hip. He's all better
now. Okay, Kevin, that would mean he would be in line for the what? Comeback player of the year, right?
Hell yeah. Mm.
You realize he's not even going to get a vote.
That's fine. Mark Teixeira will win it.
But we're not talking about Mark Teixeira. We're talking about A-Rod.
I don't care if he wins Comeback Player of the Year. I care about the Yankees winning and going on to the playoffs, and he's a part of
well,
that.
Well, they're
going to
win because the division they're in sucks.
Yeah, but they don't. They're 13 over after tonight if they win this game.
They are playing good baseball, that's for sure.
Very good. Fourth best record in the league.
We're going to skip over baseball tonight, but we'll come back and do
Dan
that.
Dan wanted to say something. You kept cutting him off, Dan. What did you
Sorry,
want to say?
Dan.
Well, like A-Rod, I was wearing sun protectant lip gloss while I was up at bat.
That's
so.
What you waited to say all that time?
Yeah, you know, I got to get them in when I can.
Sorry about that, Dan.
I'd say we could tell Kevin about Scott's home run, but your boy over here robbed him. Robbed him of a home run in the second inning. It's a hell of a play.
It was. I think it set the tone for the rest of the day because Scott just was not the same after that.
Oh, was he mad like he was in Philly when you yelled at him?
All right. Let's move on to trending topics. Dan, see you later.
Bye, Dan.
All right, ready?
I'm ready. This is trending topics, trending stories. And we obviously covered the biggest story being Hulk Hogan. But there's other things making news. And we list them much like they're doing the new written series on PTBN. We're going to go in chronological order. Here's your first trending story. And it's trending story number one.
Kev, back in the day, all Brandy wanted to do was sit up in her room thinking about you, But if she was living in Spotswood, New Jersey, when police announced details late Tuesday of a bizarre break-in, she would have been quite shocked. Authorities say the suspect, Jason Hubbard, broke into there's always his names. I even tried to practice this one. Ademowitz home on Ellendale Boulevard in Spotswood, camped out on her bed in a spare room for as many as 5 days just before 7 p.m. on May 10th, police responded to a 911 report of an intruder in the house. Upon arrival, officers came in contact with Hubbard in the home. Police subsequently placed him under arrest for criminal trespass. He was hiding upstairs underneath the bed in my daughter's bedroom. He used to date my daughter for 5 years. It didn't end well. He did not say why he came back. He just picked our house to hide in. Further investigation revealed that Hubbard entered the home through an open door when one resident was taking out the garbage. After entering the house, he proceeded to the spare bedroom, where he stayed under the bed for days, charging his 4 cell phones, utilizing an electric outlet under the bed. So what is the biggest question in all this?
Why does a guy have 4 cell phones, 5 cell phones? That's very weird. I understand, you know, your heart is broken. You never got over the girl and you want to move back into the house. You want to sniff her. You want to smell the air that she's breathing. But why so many phones? What's going on there?
Right, that's interesting. What would you have done if this was like a Goldilocks come to life here?
Well, I mean, if you're the father, you'd want to chop the guy's head off, and if you're the creep, then obviously you're brokenhearted. And I think if you're the girl, you're a little flattered and turned on all at the same time, and creeped out as well. So. I don't know. And I saw the picture of the mugshot of this guy. He's not exactly Prince Charming.
Not at all.
He's an ugly dude. So, but they dated for 5 years. That's a long time. Now, what was that? You've been married, of course, for how long? 3 years, 4 years?
No, maybe 7 years.
7 years. Okay. So other than your wife, who was the longest long-term relationship you were in?
3 years, college girlfriend.
That's a long time. How about McGinn? McGinn, long-term relationship. What the longest relationship you've ever been in? McGinn is sleeping.
Dan?
Hello?
Well, you can listen to the Extreme Odd Couple podcast. I talked all about it in the last episode. So,
well, that's great.
He either ran away or he doesn't want to join us for this.
It's tough when, you know, sometimes you never get over that girl. You know, I've been with my wife now 26 years.
Ugh, I feel bad for her.
I know, right? Torture. Every day. Every day it's just like this. It's torture for her for 26 years. Okay, so that was the first trending story. The guy, creepy dude under the bed with all those phones for 5 days. So they would leave the house and she would, and what would he do? Like get up and watch TV and make cereal and then go back under the bed before they would get home?
I have no idea. They don't have those details.
I'm very interested by that. Okay, so that was the first trending story. Usually there are three, sometimes a bonus fourth if we're good. But let's move now quickly to the second trending story here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground.
All right, this is not about Doink, Kevin Kelly. But... creepy clowns. Creepy clowns in Chicago running around cemeteries scaring people. There have been reports around the country and now here in Chicago, too. CBS 2's Dave Savini talked to the Chicagoan who had a close encounter with a nocturnal clown earlier this month. The cell phone video tells it all. A person dressed in a clown suit trespassing at historic Rose Hill Cemetery in the dead of night. Julia Graham said she was freaked out at the figures that ran toward the main gate. She and her husband were driving by around 10 p.m. When we got closer, we realized it's a clown, which is super weird. The first picture her husband snapped was of the clown scaling a 7-foot-tall gate at the Ravenswood Avenue entrance. This feat is no easy task, especially for someone wearing a clown suit. This was somebody putting forth a lot of effort and being really weird. The Northside Cemetery was clearly closed and locked for the night. Officials don't know what to make of it, because other than the trespass, there's no complaints of vandalism. It got weirder. When Julia and her husband hung around to get a better look, the clown was not deterred or afraid. He just slowly waved at the couple. Incidents like this are not isolated. Videos of creepy clowns went viral last year. Kev, where does this rank on your just like freaked out scale right here?
Listen, I've always said that one of the most made up fears that people have. People are afraid of snakes. People are afraid of the number 13. They're afraid of flying. But I've always said that more people make up, oh, I'm afraid of clowns. Listen, if you read It, you were creeped out by Pennywise. Okay, I got it. This though is going to exponentially increase the number of people that legit are afraid of clowns.
That's scary though. I mean, that's freaky.
It is.
You're not freaked out if you see a clown climb on a cemetery fence at midnight?
Yeah. No, that's it. You know, and it's kind of like, okay, if it's around October 31st, Pagliacci. I get it. Hachi Machi. Maybe it Pagliacci. Is. Maybe it's that, you know, that time of year. It's some kids playing pranks. I got it. But it's the freaking summertime. It's the middle of July. This is not normal behavior. Now, there are some people that do keep a Christmas room 12 months of the year. So maybe we're starting to see Halloween take its spot as a 12-month holiday. And there could be
some
people,
really screwed up people out there that want to do.
There really are some screwed up people out there. But I also like the idea of candy 12 months a year. So maybe we could work on, you know, kind of a weekly trick or treat kind of thing. So I'm creeped out by it. But I, you know, again, it's Chicago. So anything could happen.
What about Bozo?
Bozo was from Chicago, the original Bozo, the clown on Chicago television.
You're living in the past, man. Some clown from your childhood. Eric the Clown with his big shoe. Yeah.
That's great. Homie the Clown, of course, about 25 years ago In Living
I think
Color.
Dink was probably the creepy. Or maybe was it Pink or Wink? One of them was really creepy looking. I think it was Wink, maybe.
Very creepy. Very, very creepy. All right. So that is the second trending story. Now, I know we have at least another one. So it's time to fire up the music box as we bring in the third trending story here on The Kevin Kelly Show.
I could picture you doing the Crocodile Rock, Kev.
I'm singing the song, actually.
That thing hair flopping around. Rally animals have been making themselves known for years now, be it the rally squirrel, possum, or even the rally monkey. If there's an animal who might be tangentially affected the outcome of a baseball game by its mere presence, and someone, anyone, might fight that animal, we're all about it. But we have to draw the line somewhere, and it turns out that line is somewhere between rally possum and rally gator, because the Port Charlotte stone crabs found a 10-foot gator chilling under the bench of the visitor's dugout. Stone Crabs and Class A advanced affiliate of the Rays were hosting the Daytona Tortugas of the Charlotte Sports Park in Charlotte, Port Charlotte, Florida. And the croc was just hanging out under the bench. Now, where does this rank on your creepy clown in the cemetery scale? And your guy, you can see the theme here tonight, right? So you got the guy hiding under the bed. You got the clown in the cemetery. Now you got the alligator hiding under the bench. And yes, I know this is Crocodile Rock, but it fits. What are your thoughts here, Kev? How are you ranking these things from a fear perspective?
You're okay. So I grew up in Florida and born in New York, moved to Florida when I was 9, and alligators were pretty commonplace. You saw them all the time, especially if you went and played golf. Not a big thing. But under a bench, that's the fear. That they're going to grab your leg when you don't see them.
Right.
So, yeah, that is very creepy. I would say guy under the bed 1, alligator under the bench 2, creepy clowns 3, only because I think they're punk kids. And I could run them over with my car. But I have no defense for the alligator on when I'm sitting on the bench. And I have no hope of a guy with 4 cell phones underneath my bed.
Right, because if you destroy 3 of them, he's still got a 4th to do something.
Exactly my point.
And you don't know which one's going to detonate the device. You don't know what's going on with those 4.
Thank you. Exactly anyway. Right. So, yeah. And these rally animals, let's face it.
They don't go screw.
Somebody leaves the dumpster open and, you know, some stray raccoon comes in, gets some popcorn and then runs on the field. Now all of a sudden the team is supposed to win. Give me a break.
Yeah,
but
especially the
let me ask you
monkey.
This. When your Jets are struggling to another, you know, 5-11 season this year.
Asshole.
Do you sit in the same seat? Are you a superstitious fan?
I used to be. It's kind of faded with time because now I have to really squeeze this stuff in. When I had the time to just do whatever I wanted, you know. Like the Yankees.
Before kids and marriage and responsibility and adulthood. Yeah, all that stuff.
Right. So like the 2003 ALCS Game 7 when Aaron Boone's walk-off. Like I would not move from my seat for that whole game. Like that's one example. But now, yeah, I do what I have to do. If I got to move, I got to move. I got to relocate, I got to relocate. Now, if they get hot and they make a run, we'll see. Could be something different.
Well, it's a, it's interesting to be that superstitious person. I still find myself doing that all the time, no matter the situation. More fun than anything else. So over, let's see, if you had to pick one game right now, and if you could rather see the Jets make the playoffs, or the Yankees make it to the World Series.
Just make the playoffs, the Jets? I mean, do they have
make
a shot?
Make the playoffs. They're the second wild card. They're barely in.
I'll take the Yankees making the World Series because you can say the Jets are rebuilding, new coach, new system, whatever.
Okay.
And if you're telling me the Jets get in as like the first wild card and like have like a strong record, only finishing a couple games behind the Pats, and they have a chance, I'd probably take that.
What is more likely in your mind to happen? I think it's too soon to fully predict football to guess from a fan standpoint. But what does your gut say? What does your heart say as far as are the Jets likely to make the playoffs this year? What's more likely to happen? Jets make the playoffs. Yankees get to the World Series.
Yankees, because I actually think they're legitimately good, especially if they add a pitcher. I do think the Jets are built to make the playoffs this year. I just think they need to get decent play from Geno Smith. Like if he can just not turn the ball over and just be average, I think they're set up well because they have really good weapons, an above average offensive line, and a very good defense.
If he could just not suck, right, it would be really good. I would really appreciate that.
And I think they'll give him 4 games because their bye is week 5. So I think he has 4 games to not suck before they turn to Ryan Fitzpatrick to try and save the season. Now, the middle of their schedule is kind of soft. So, I mean, I think they have enough talent. 2 years ago, they had a much worse defense. And with Geno and a much worse offense, they somehow got to 8 wins. So I think with what they have, and assuming they get like nothing from quarterback, I think they at least could get like 7 wins just based on their defense and running game and all that alone. So I think if they get any positives from the quarterback, you might be looking at 9 games, maybe 9 wins. So I would say somewhere along there.
And we'll delve more into football, and we'll get our picks in and, you know, kind of our thoughts about the season. And we'll have a lot of fun with that because NFL season right around the corner, but we're in the heart of baseball season as well. And the trading deadline rapidly approaching, at least the non-waiver deadline. So I know Place to Be Nation always has a lot of great sports coverage and a lot of other things besides just professional wrestling. So that could be a good source for everything. Now, I know sometimes there is a bonus trending story. Have we earned the right for our 40th episode for a bonus one tonight?
It might have to be a new edition. Maybe the fourth story will always be some kind of absurd cops thing. All right, so we've talked about clowns. We've talked about guys hiding under beds. We've talked about alligators under benches. This may be the creepiest. Police made a routine traffic stop Thursday morning and got more than they bargained for. And this is out of Casper, Wyoming. Roy Tilbett, 51, stepped out of his El Camino for a field sobriety test, and Casper police noticed several eyeballs sliding from his right pant leg onto the road. Feeling they could have a potential murderer on their hands, they quickly drew guns and cuffed Tilbett. Tilbett assured police that eyeballs were not human. Instead, they were cow eyeballs that he had pilfered from Johnson Meats, a slaughterhouse where Tilbett is employed as a butcher. Bovine eyeball, pictured above, was from Tilbett's rectum. A total of 30 were found. The company won't let us take animal scraps and instead tossed them in the landfill. They're very wasteful. We should be able to take the scrap meat and other parts home. The company should start a green initiative. We don't even have recycling. I enjoy eating bovine eyeballs and smuggling them out in my colon was the only way I knew how to get them out without potentially getting caught and fired. Police estimate that he has smuggled, or he estimates he has smuggled over several thousand eyeballs from the plant over the last few months. I put them in soup. They're beneficial for erectile dysfunction, which I currently battle, and I also like the texture and taste. Tilbit was arrested for driving under the influence, his BAC 2 times higher than the legal limit, in possession of several large carving knives, possibly stolen from the meatpacking plant, and Tilbit has not been charged with theft because police need to determine who the knives belong to. Police also unsure whether to charge him for the theft of the bovine eyeballs. They will talk to the employer first. So, Kevin Kelly, bovine eyeballs in the rectum. Where does that rank on your creepy list of tonight's stuff?
Oh, he wins the prize. This is it. It was the layer cake, and it just kept getting better and better. Like, that was the perfect trending story right there.
We've had some good ones, but that may be my favorite.
Casper, Wyoming, 51-year-old Roy Hibbard, right? Doesn't he play for the Pacers? that was my first thought. Then eyeball rolls down his pant leg, okay? Police think they have a murderer on their hands. No, wait, you've got the wrong guy. I'm just trying to free the eyeballs so they don't wind up in the landfill. I take them home and I make soup out of them, and I like how they feel. Up my butt.
I mean...
And the cops don't know what to do with him.
What do you do?
First of all, he's bombed out of his mind.
What do you do?
He's bombed out of his mind. I just take him back home. Say, you know what, brother? Just stay there. Just give me the knives and you're good, okay?
I mean, you can't build like a pouch and put it in his pants and stuff him in the pouch. I mean, there has to be a better way.
I don't know. Like, I've got to, hey, Roy, let's go to lunch, man. Okay. Oh, wait, I forgot something back at my station. Hold on. I'll be there in a minute. Hey, Roy, man, come on. We got to run to Burger King. I know, but I was packing these eyeballs away in my butt.
just imagine when you see that just come down his pant leg while you're talking. You know what I mean? It's like, what do you even do?
Hey, man, it's all good, baby. It's just an eyeball. Don't worry about it. I'm good.
Let's take this home.
Hey, we're out of time, but this is the 40th episode of the Kevin Kelly Show. That means over the past 80 weeks, give or take, we have been together with you. You've been together with us, and we have shared good times. We've had a lot of laughs. We have some great introspective guests. The best thing about whether you subscribe on iTunes or you listen every week through Stitcher or Podbean or through the PlaceToBeNation.com website, all of the archived episodes are available, and you kind of see through the landscape of time that I've had everybody that I've known personally on here, and some are really good friends of mine. Some are big name household names, big stars of the past and the present, and even some stars of the future. So we've done a lot of good stuff here in the first 40 episodes of The Best Is Yet to Come. I want to thank JR and Dan McGinn and Brad and everybody in PTBN for their love and support over the first 40 episodes. And thanks for the for all the kind words that the fans have sent along as well. We'll continue to do our best efforts. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time. And the good times are going to keep rolling as I bring back to the eyeball story that we heard just a few moments ago. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has listened. Thanks to everybody who subscribes, and to Dan and to Justin, thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks to Jay Lethal, who was a phenomenal guest. And we will see you this Wednesday, Destination America, Ring of Honor, now at 11 p.m. Eastern time. So no rushing home for you West Coasters. Everybody will be able to enjoy it at 8 p.m. And it'll be awesome in the West Coast, 11 p.m. Eastern time. So be sure you're there. Okay, that's it. We'll see you in 2 weeks here on the Kevin Kelly Show, Place to Be Nation, our website home, theplacetobenation.com.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush...
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with cock.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh, my God, he's back.
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.